Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, do you have emotional clutter? Don't we all? I don't know who doesn't. It's really an amazing world that we live in. Complicated, difficult, and it clutters us up. And so the more we can work on it, the better. And so we seek help from people who really make it their business to help us clear emotional clutter. And so there's a wonderful book I've read called Clearing Emotional Clutter. And it's written by a man who's been on the show a number of times before because he has a number of books out about mindfulness. Because certainly that'll help clear emotional clutter. So to talk about that is our guest, Donald Altman. Donald, welcome.
Oh, hi, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here today with you.
I'm so glad that we can talk about this because this is bothering all of us. I don't know anyone who's listening who doesn't have emotional clutter. And your book is really a wonderful opportunity to look at that in ways that help us understand how it gets there and what to do about it.
Yeah. An interesting thing, I mean, you can see the physical clutter, and it's really obvious, and of course there's that show Hoarders, but so many of us have mental clutters, thoughts that are keeping us from being present or interacting, responding effectively in the world and with others, and we're not even always aware of it.
Right, so a lot of your practice comes from mindfulness.
Yes.
And that's being aware of all of these aspects of life that contribute to our emotional clutter.
Absolutely. It's being able to notice. It creates some safe distance from your thoughts, for example, and make your mind your friend is how I kind of think of it. And looking at all the things from the past, ancestral clutter, things we may have learned from our family, things we have brought into our heads and may not even be aware of, or just path clutter from the past, old conditioning, or it could be the daily clutter that builds up, almost like tartar builds up on your teeth day by day, and you have to, mentally floss it away.
Well, there's so many choices to make in life. Right now, we're facing political choices,
right.
And it gets confusing.
I think we, we probably have not had a time in history where we have more choices than what we have now. And when you think about just going into a store to do some shopping, there's such a wonderful abundance of everything. But what happens is that then we end up having the shelf with all the cereals. Suddenly we have 200 different cereals to choose from, and so many different choices. And what we've learned is that in terms of science, and I like to bring science into my work and in clearing emotional clutter, I talk about a lot of science that we have. That all these choices can end up depleting our mental energy, and that we have to think about how can we simplify our lives and simplify our choices. We have less time today, probably than ever before, for reflection, for time to take a pause, just a simple pause, and to be present. When I travel around the country and internationally teaching workshops for mental health professionals and business people, and I remember one time where we paused and we had everybody just sit and pay attention to their breath for just a few minutes. And I have had several people, when I do that, talk about how guilty they feel just sitting and reflecting for a few minutes, that they have that feeling they need to be productive. And I think, there's this push to kind of make ourselves almost mechanical, Peter, where we view ourselves more in a mechanistic, machine-like way. And I think we're really doing ourselves a disservice when we do that. And so removing that machine orientation is one way of getting away from clutter.
Well, I think that we live in an age where...
5, 4, 3.
Well, I think one of the problems is the age that we live in, it's very confusing right now. There's a survival need. A lot of people are afraid we're not going to survive. There's all kinds of reasons for it, including climate change and the economy and so much looks like it's imploding and falling apart, and so we're hectic, and we get cluttered by the hectic pace of feeling the need to overcome our fears. And the media doesn't help, because they keep pushing us, pushing these fear buttons.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think that you really could see that fear as a form of clutter. And actually, the brain is designed to respond to fear very quickly. And that's one reason why I think the media knows that. We'll respond to a dangerous story, and it will glue us to the TV. And sometimes it's important, and I want people to think about that. Maybe, sometimes it's important to take a break from technology, or a pause, or maybe sometimes a pause from those particular kinds of news programs that are firing up our inner fears. And then we live with that fear, and it really can be debilitating in a lot of ways. So, I think you're absolutely right.
I think the media is responsible for a lot of our emotional clutter, because of all of the input that we get, not only about things to be afraid of, but also things to buy.
Oh, right. Well, another kind of clutter there, right? And I talk about that in Clearing Emotional Clutter, and about affluenza, which is, let me see if actually I can find that. I have the definition of it in here, of affluenza. But it's basically the need for more, never ending need for more, and to the point where you really stop appreciating the things that you have in front of you, and that's one reason I also talk about gratitude as a very powerful anti-clutter clearing mechanism. With gratitude, we can appreciate what we already have, and therefore we extract value out of things instead of just getting tired of them.
Well, I like what you talk about in the book about value and gratitude in terms of the research that's been done on the joy of our normal life, rather than always being plugged in to extraordinary. Because on TV, everything is extraordinary and bigger than life. And we all look at our lives and we go, this doesn't compare to what I see on TV, and that's so much more extraordinary. But but research has shown, and you talk about it in the book, that when push comes to shove, we really want the joy in the wonderful little things in our lives and the normalcy in our lives, and to really treasure. So that's the gratitude, is really treasure the small stuff.
Savoring that ordinary moment and just this mindful appreciation of this moment, and the fact that we're often so focused on on something that's going to happen in the future or the outcome, that we forget about what I like to think of as the in-between moments, the in-between time, the time where we're standing in line, or you're driving somewhere, you're transitioning somewhere, or just you're sitting, you're enjoying, you're sitting out somewhere, you could just enjoy that ordinary moment, enjoy nature, enjoy the beauty around you. And I think that if we can take snapshots of those moments, we can take mental snapshots and just sit and appreciate that, it can be very powerful.
Well, but that's the mindfulness thing that you talk about. And you also talk about how many people, maybe the majority of people, aren't used to being in their own thoughts. They're used to being distracted. They're hearing, they have their earphones on, they're watching TV or whatever on the internet. They're not really paying attention to themselves.
Yeah, and I think what's happened is technology has kind of got us more and more distracted, and it's fractured and splintered our attentional ability, our ability to pay attention and to get more deeply focused on something. And so our minds are multitasking all the time. There have been studies with students showing that they have a difficult time even spending more than 2 or 3 minutes on something that's very important for them to study. Within a matter of just a couple of minutes, they're off multitasking, And they found that their ability to learn is at a very superficial level. So we do need to think about, this is about how do I have healthy boundaries with technology. And I, in the Clearing Emotional Clutter book, I actually have a little chart where people can fill out and to do an assessment, a self-assessment of how are you using your time with technology and how are you spending your time with others, and is that where you want to be? So it's not a matter of blaming ourselves or anything, but just increasing our awareness and saying, okay, I'm spending 7 hours a day. And by the way, the average American spends over five hours a day in front of screens. People 8 to 18 years old, according to a Kaiser Family Foundation study, spend about over 7.5 hours a day in front of screens. And
so there's not a lot of self-discovery.
right. No, there isn't. And actually one funny study, I shouldn't use the word funny, one revealing study that was done actually had people sit in a room alone, and they took away their cell phone, but the only thing that was in the room was a little device, and they could administer a shock to themselves. Over 50% of the people gave themselves a shock rather than just sit with their thoughts.
Yeah, they wanted to be entertained by the pain.
Yeah, right. Or distracted away from their thoughts and away from what was happening inwardly. And I think there's a tremendous amount of wisdom to gain by sitting and reflecting. And so I hope it doesn't become a lost art, but
right.
it definitely can be a way for us to start to clear away some of that clutter just by what I like to think of as fidelity to the moment or faithfulness to this moment. How can I be faithful to whatever it is I'm doing? If I'm sitting, I could be 100% committed to the experience of sitting. Or if I'm walking, I could be 100% committed to that experience. I could take this next breath. And so I invite your listeners to take this next breath and just commit yourself 100% to the experience of breathing in, noticing the little pause between the breath, and then having a nice slow exhale. Just see how nice that feels.
Because in the present moment, there can be no clutter because it's just a fraction of a moment of time. So if we can continue
right.
that fraction of moment of time, on a regular basis, we can be in moments where we just are.
Life is filled with these little moments, and if you're stuck in worrying about yesterday, something that happened yesterday, you find yourself constantly being in a rut about anxieties or worries about things yet undone, things about tomorrow. Then it's hard to be here. It's hard to respond and participate. You know, how can we really participate in this moment instead of just being a spectator, instead of just watching or worrying, but really allow ourselves to enjoy and savor and participate in this moment? And that means participating with others. Mindfulness is not just, and clearing clutter is not just about being more aware of your inner processes, your senses, and so forth, but and your thoughts, but also how we relate to others. And therein, I think, lies a great treasure for sustaining ourselves, nurturing friendships, and building relationships. And that is one of the real joys of life, and that is one way to clear away clutter.
Right, and there's good guidance in your book about working with others, living, creating relationships and the appropriate relationships. So many relationships
yeah.
create extra clutter.
Oh, they can. And sometimes we need to, recognize our part in that. And how could we be with others in a more open, compassionate, understanding way? And one way that I think can remove clutter when it comes to others who maybe have different opinions than us, others who see things differently, is to recognize that everybody has suffered in some way. And we all, there isn't anybody who isn't going to age or isn't going to experience loss and grief. And So, you know, when you look at another person in that way, even if it's that person that's, you know, cut you off on the freeway, you suddenly realize, you know, maybe this person's suffering is overflowing. They're stressed out. They are late for this important meeting or whatever, and they're not coping as well as they could. And if you recognize that they are in a place of suffering, you could bring some compassion to bear. You could have some greater understanding and a willingness to see that, you know, we've all experienced that. And maybe I'm not so different from that person.
Well, right. And in many ways, we need to understand how we all are all different. And so therefore, we have compassion for every difference, including our own. You know, it's just so much that we need to appreciate about our uniqueness and our strengths. And you talk about that in the book also, about really discovering our strengths and appreciating them.
And it's a beautiful thing, yeah, to discover our strengths. You know, we're a very critical culture in general. I think that we can take that inside, and maybe some of us have had critical parents or whatever. And so that voice, that critical inner voice, can become a tremendous source of clutter and just also almost suppress that natural feeling of joy that we can feel in life. And so it's important that we notice our strengths. And our strengths are all those little things that we may not be aware of. Right. You know, when you're waking up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you take a shower. Those are the strengths of self-care. Maybe when you get to, you know, you get in your car, you get to work, you go to this appointment, and you're there on time. That's a strength of respect for others or timeliness, and organization and planning and so forth. You know, even when I like to tell people, you know, if you've ever been in a shopping mall and you go out and you're able to find your car among that big sea of cars in the big parking lot, that's the strength of memory, right? We often don't notice the strengths that we have, or or we diminish or devalue them. And, oh, that, you know, that's just what I do. That's my routine. But the truth is, you have these strengths all the time. And if you can start to identify and recognize those, and put one strength into work, and this is one of the a wonderful practice, and I have a lot of practices in this book. One wonderful practice with strengths, Peter, is to just identify one of your strengths, and then every day for a week, put that into play, apply it time a day for the week, and then see how that makes you feel, and even journal it if you want.
Sure. Now, that's wonderful. I work with the human design system and with destiny cards and numerology in different ways that help people identify themselves. It teaches people the language about themselves, the mechanics of themselves. So then when you know yourself better, then you work and strategize your life from that self-knowledge, and so much easier then. And also that in these forms, it teaches us about our weaknesses also, so that we can have more compassion for them and do a better job with them.
And even, funny, I mean, ironically, even noticing your weakness is a form of a strength, right? It's the ability to look within and to assess yourself.
Yeah,
and
to work
toward improving yourself.
I teach classes about our shadows, our shadow self,
and to
identify those shadows within us and then see strengths within them.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Even the strength has the shadow has a strength in it. I love that you're doing that. That's cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so rewarding because it really helps people so much. So there's so much in your book that really has so many different directions to go to understand how we clear ourselves and live with ourselves better. One of the things I really like talking about is our ancestral genes, and you talk about epigenetics,
right?
And how that we can actually alter our behavior when we understand our roots. And there's a program called Family Constellations that people teach, and that really helps us understand how much a product we are of our ancestors.
What we're learning now about epigenetics, and maybe I could just briefly explain that for your listeners, is, you know, we have our genes, and that's kind of like the hard wiring our expression of maybe somehow we experience things, or how, you know, that we have different kinds of propensities. But there's also something called the epigenetics. So if the genetics are kind of like the hardwiring, or kind of like the computer, the epigenetics, and that translates as above the gene, is really the software that tells our genes what to do, when to work, and when to turn on and off. And our interactions with this environment, moment by moment, actually is turning our genes on or off through epigenetics. And so what we eat, for example, there have been experiments to show that in certain animals that eating certain foods may turn on and off different obesity genes, for example. And what's fascinating is that is inheritable to the next generation. So when you turn on or off certain genes, those can be inherited. And so we may have experienced the trauma from generations ago, or certain fears that have been passed down, or different addictive patterns.
And those are right? Cluttering our genes.
Oh, yeah, clutter in the genes. That's right. And the nice thing to know here is, though, it's not permanently hardwired, right, so that we can make different choices that can then be like the software that will then change that wiring,
right?
It's like running a new program. And I think we can run new programs even by attuning to people who have the attributes that we want. We don't always get the download we want, especially maybe growing up. And I think a lot of us may be wounded or maybe don't have a sense of safety and security when we're in relationships. And so I actually talk in the book about how we could rewire those feelings through finding through a
you call them benefactors.
Yeah.
And they might also be mentors or role models, but these are people who show us, can condition us. And that's what we want. We want to change our conditioning with people who we want to model after and be influenced by. And so that's really a wonderful thing, is to...
Yeah, and to think that that's possible, I mean, it is incredible. We can do it, and we can, and we even have... what are called mirror neurons in the brain, which means that we can attune with somebody and feel what somebody else is feeling. So we can, if you had somebody who in your life who you've seen has had ups and downs, but they're able to cope with that. In fact, maybe they find something humorous, or they're able to find that silver lining, and they've kind of trained themselves in a way to do that. Well, you can actually, and I talk in the book about having have several steps for attuning with that person and rewiring your brain through being with people like that.
Right. It's like playing sports with people who are better than you, and then you model yourself.
Oh, exactly. And that, if you play with somebody who's actually more skilled, you improve your skill in that sport. Very true. That's a good analogy.
Right. Another thing I want to talk about is softening and how much we need to be aware of how tight we are in our own ideas and our own sense of urgencies and addictions and whatever, and really to take the edge off of those things and become more flexible.
Mm.
And that's another way to clear
clutter. That's true. I
think
we can get very locked in to what I sometimes call the egocentric point of view, the I, the me, the mine, where I very strongly, even rigidly hold on to something. And if I do that, it blocks me from really listening to another person. You can almost think of a cup that's filled up to the top. If you had a teacup or coffee cup and it's filled up to the top, there's no space for anything else to come in. So it's almost the idea of emptying your own cup.
That's so important.
So that you allow yourself to listen and absorb in a new way.
Right.
And I think it could really alter how we can learn how to understand others and how to create new pathways together, new ways of being creating a sustainable community.
To be more flexible, and so many times, as you say, it's the ego that gets involved and says, no, it has to be this way or else. And it's like, no, well, maybe not.
Right. And that's where acceptance comes in, accepting that, somebody else has different points of view than you. You don't necessarily have to agree, but what if you were to set aside your assumptions even for a short period of time?
And right, just to listen.
You talk a lot about listening
in your book, and that's really wonderful. It's really how to be more open-minded in hearing, and then maybe our mind can figure things out better than it has.
Well, what's so fascinating, you mentioned survival early on, how we can get locked in a survival mode. But even if we start to feel defensive, if you're having you get in an argument with somebody, or maybe it's a discussion and then it turns into an argument, and when that happens, you stop listening. And that is actually how our brain is wired. If you were walking, hundreds of years ago in the jungle and you heard a tiger growl, that inner stress part of the brain that triggers fight or flight would fire off, because the auditory nerve from the ear, in order to get to the parts of the brain that process hearing, it goes right through the it's called the amygdala. That's the smoke detector in the brain that is looking for anything that might be dangerous. And so the same thing. If we're getting in an argument with somebody, that is triggered. That smoke detector goes off, and now you stop listening.
Yes, and yet some of those dangers aren't as valid as it used to be, so we need to be clear as to what's really a danger or not.
Absolutely. It might just be a perceived threat, something you learned as dangerous, and it may not be a danger.
Right.
And it's kind of sad because, I've had people, I've worked with people as a psychotherapist who were sitting on a beautiful beach in Hawaii and couldn't enjoy it because they... we're worrying about things that,
I know about that.
The future. Yeah.
Yeah, we all have that.
Yeah.
So this is great, clearing emotional clutter. It's so good to have this opportunity to talk with you and read your book.
Well, thank you. Same here. I always enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you, Donald. Donald Altman. And how can people find, you have mindfulpractices.com, right?
Right. If you go to the mindfulpractices.com website, you can sign up for a newsletter. It's called Mindful Living Newsletter, and that's on the homepage of the website. And then once a month, I have some new mindfulness reflections for clearing away clutter and some new research in the field and just tips for bringing that into your life.
That's so great. Donald Altman, the author of Clearing Emotional Clutter, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Oh, you're welcome, Peter. Thank you.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.